Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
And I'm delighted to say we're joined in studio now by Barbara Scully and Declan Buckley for our So You Think You're an Adult slot. Barbara, Declan, good to see you both.
Thank you very much. Welcome. It's lovely to be here, isn't it, Declan?
It's thrilling. Thrilling.
Good. Just one question before we begin. Is there ever follow-up on the questions? You know, because last week I was very taken by the man who, or the woman, who was with her partner 8 months and he wasn't really, you know, hitting the spot, as it were. And we were giving some very good advice.
Very good advice.
They don't ever get in touch and say, last week's been magnificent.
Thank God, no.
No.
Yeah. Thank God they
I
don't
thought you were
going
to say, have there been lawsuits because of the very bad advice that we've given?
Yes. Yes. No. We don't tend to focus on how they get on after our after our wonderful wisdom
have
has been.
Had somebody cross over the street to go over and shake her hand? We haven't changed.
Yeah. Haven't yet, actually. No.
Yeah. I had 8 miserable months with a man, but then you advised me, and now
changed everything.
I'm singing songs in the morning. No, what a pity. Right, better get into these ones. So, first up for you, I share a two-bedroom apartment with my older sister. I'm 24 and she's 33. Because of the age difference, we have never been that close or pally. We don't spend much time together in the apartment, to be honest, as we both have full-time jobs. However, I'm finding our living arrangement really troublesome recently. She has started dating a man from her work whom I don't know. The problem is they are very led on having sex. And despite my best efforts, I can hear everything. You can imagine how disturbing I find this. It's gotten to the point that sometimes I have to get up late at night and go for a walk in order to wait for them to finish. At first it was mildly amusing, but now I can't bear it. We are not close at all, and the idea of broaching the subject with her face to face mortifies me. I just don't know what to do.
Oh dear. Irish, I think we Irish are gas in the way we really don't like talking about sex at all. And I think this is very typical of that, because it doesn't matter whether they're close or not, or it doesn't matter whether she's even her sister or not. And this is the same as any other problem that you would have with somebody with whom you're sharing a living space, you know, that's getting it between you and your literally night's sleep. You just need to mention it. You don't need to have a full-blown conversation into her sex life or any of the details that's going on in the bedroom. All you need to say is, I'm being kept awake, yous are very loud, can you keep it down? That's all. No more, no less. That's all you need to say. Her sister is probably unaware that she's being quite as loud because she's being transported into ecstasies of delight, obviously, when she's being very loud.
Camera so
problems for her.
She's not aware of it being very loud. So a short and sweet mention should sort it out. And if you're not willing to do that, nothing will change and you'll have to go and get yourself earplugs.
I was thinking if she does find it hard to say, now text, would that be the
No, that's a bit weird, isn't it? When you're living with somebody, a text.
Yeah.
That would make me really cross now if somebody did that. Yeah, I'd get very cross.
Because it would interrupt you or because you don't like
texting. No, because a text. Why are you sending me a text when I live with you?
Really,
when I saw you this morning
this
and I've seen... Ah, no, that's ridiculous.
Some people text each other and they're sitting on the same sofa.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
it's very modern. Although I do think that, you know, it's not that modern.
So glad you're here. Do you know that?
If
bring the modern edge.
A little bit of weirdness.
Yeah, I'm calling the police. It sounds like you're in pain. I'm calling the police.
But if it is even...
Are you all right in there, Mary?
Is he hurting you?
that could work. Yeah.
Or you could just start making your own kind of noise and let them know that you... I don't mean sex noises, obviously. I mean,
what
like,
kind of
put music on or slam the door when you go for a walk, that kind of stuff. You know, just kind of make your presence known in a sort of a passive-aggressive way.
Do you think if you're in the middle of having sex with somebody and you're, you know, being transported to ecstasy of delight, you'll go, oh, Mary's banged the door. That's some kind of code
Mary's
for I need
Jedward
to...
Or Mary's put Jedward on, or Mary's,
Jedward.
You know...
Yeah, yeah. Do you think you'd notice
you know what
that?
I mean?
No, you wouldn't.
You would.
No, you wouldn't.
I'm concerned between either your apathy towards Jedward or how into it you get when you're having sex where the whole world gets shut out.
But you don't really. Anyway, I'm not going there. But anyway, yeah.
She should just say
Jedward slam the door and then if not, text her.
Right. Further suggestions to 53106. Fight fire with fire, says someone there. Yeah, that means you have to meet
sex
somebody.
Noises.
Well, you don't necessarily, but yeah.
Oh, I... Okay, now
right.
I don't want, yeah, I'm not moving in with her sister.
Will we move along?
Yeah, if you like. Yeah.
My My boyfriend and I recently bought our first home. We are currently refurbishing the house. We can't afford an interior decorator, so we're doing it ourselves. At first, I was really excited about the idea of decorating our own home the way we want it. However, it has now become a nightmare. I've discovered my boyfriend has no taste and no real sense of aesthetics. He continually suggests colour palettes, carpet choices and lighting ideas that are dreadful and not in keeping with the way I want the place to be. His outlook is uniformly masculine and it is almost as if he wants the house to be like a bachelor pad. He even wants to turn the laundry room into a mini gym. I'm really frustrated because every time I try to reason with him about the decoration of the house, we end up in a massive argument. It is making me question about whether buying a home together was a good idea. I don't know what to do.
Dramas.
Oh God.
This is funny though, isn't it? I kind of read this twice because I the first time I read it, I went, wow, who is this person? And then I read it again, hoping that I'd find kind of nuggets of sarcasm and jokiness in there, but I didn't find them. It's this classic thing. We've bought a house that we are refurbishing and now it's a nightmare because it's not the way I like it.
Yeah.
Is basically what she's saying. And I love the idea that good taste and masculine taste are kind of two different spheres. I don't even know what masculine taste is. What's that? Is that kind of like...
Oh, I stayed in a hotel that had it about two weekends ago. Yeah, we had grey walls and black furniture and
I think more kind
of... He's going to kill me.
I am going to kill you because I think you mean heterosexual taste, really.
Wasn't to my taste.
Is it? I don't know. I mean, obviously coming from a place where, you know, our people are known for our flawless taste.
Our excellence in interior design
and leading countries. But I suppose...
Do you see me threw that in there? Yeah, it's very clever.
This is obviously a thing where it's like any kind of thing. When you're living with somebody, you have to find a way to live together and finding those compromises. What she needs to do is recognise that he's going to be a little bit difficult on some things. He obviously maybe just doesn't want her to get all in her own way. She has to pick her battles, decide what things are absolute necessities for her.
What are the red line issues?
I would say it's the permanent stuff. It's stuff like big items. Go for that. You know, I don't want anything else other than that sofa. You can hang something on the wall and 3 months later take it down and hang something else up that you like better.
Yeah.
So just kind of, you know, do it on a piecemeal basis. But as I said, the only way to get that to ultimately where you want to go is to be certain about the key things at first.
The two things that jumped out of this letter for me, actually, where we can't have, this is their first home. Her and her boyfriend, first home. They can't afford an interior decorator and they have a laundry room. Like,
how come they have the laundry room already?
Yeah, that's ridiculous. And if, like, fair play, you know. Yeah. But I mean, it must be a fantastic first home because, geez, it was a long way from laundry rooms we wear and interior decorators.
But maybe the laundry room or whatever that room, you know, in the future, that would be something for children. A kitchen, one kitchen.
Well, a kitchen.
Yeah.
That's the way it was back in the day. You know, so they're doing really well. But other than that, I agree with you. I wouldn't be quite as underhand, perhaps, as the way you described sticking to the big items and then letting him choose the small items that can be then moved out and replaced when he's not looking. I would suggest perhaps dividing the territory a little bit and saying, I'm going to do the lounge and then you can do the dining room or the kitchen or the whatever else. That might be one way of doing it. I think really it's all about compromise. And I think she's learning, you know, that she's now part of a couple and that they've bought this together. So it can't be all her own way. It's not going to be exactly like the way she wants it. But
and when you're talking about taste, though, you know, this is another issue, is that when you're talking about taste, I've got good taste. I'm talking about... Not you specifically, Barbara, but I've got great taste. You, Barbara, have very bad taste. Well, not specifically you. How do I get you to acquire my superior taste?
Or park your views.
Yeah, it's a slowly,
park
slowly
your views,
kind of.
Really.
It's like re-education. You know, it's kind of like trying to...
Normally you're just
the
worn down.
The other thing
down.
Is, though, that the last line
though,
of... The last line of the letter says that she's now beginning to question whether buying a home was a good idea.
Is it. There are some people who think this is a big issue. They will never survive this, says a texter. If you have such different taste, it will never work. Opposites don't always attract, especially when it comes to taste, says Jim. So Jim sees this as a get out of jail card, really.
Well, you're going to leave somebody because you don't like
their curtains.
Their tasting curtains. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think that that's
curtains.
Very expensive.
It is expensive. That's what I'm saying. You know, there's certain things that are expensive that you have to go, that won't be changed very quickly.
You've been living with the curtains for a long time.
Would you have insisted on your way?
No, I remember the day I was in a curtain shop. I felt I'd actually died. I felt the person I used to be was over.
Right.
Somebody was asking me for my views on curtains.
Right.
I felt, yeah. I never thought I'd make that decision.
And were you just not interested then?
No.
Were you happy for her to make all the decisions?
Yes.
See, that's really the secret, I think.
Yes.
There you go. I didn't want to say it, but Tom actually said it. And I think that's the secret. I don't know how it works out in gay couples.
I've already explained this. We both
don't talk to me in that condescending manner.
Taste, so it's never an issue. It's never an issue.
You've got a pink house, right?
It's gorgeous pink house. You can see it from space.
Oh, yes. Advice, please, 53106. She should be happy he cares and is willing to do any interior design with her at all.
No.
Yeah. No?
No, no. It works much better, Togo, for personal experience, the way you said it, if he really isn't that bothered.
Yeah.
Maybe the only reason he's bothered is because her taste isn't very good in the first place.
Well,
like, you know.
Get him a shed. Yeah.
He wants a mini gym. More than
Fair enough.
I'm a 32-year-old professional man. I've just started a new job which requires me to give occasional presentations to my colleagues. However, I struggle with social anxiety. The thought of having to present to a group is alarming. I was asked about this in the interview, but of course I told the hiring panel that I am comfortable with public speaking because I was desperate to get the job and I love every other aspect of the work that I am doing. I have my first presentation in a fortnight's time and it's really starting to eat me. I'm terrified I will freeze up and make a balls in front of everyone. Advice, please.
We should ask the performer for the advice on this one, should we? The performance artist.
Yeah. No. I don't know. This is a funny one because I think people who believe that they're not experts at something always believe that the person who is the expert doesn't experience nerves of any kind. Yeah. And that's just not true. And I think once everybody recognises that everybody feels nervous and everybody feels... To a degree, the same kind of sensation. It's just that the more practiced you are at doing something, that sensation changes, or you find ways to convert it into something that's performative or something that's good for you. Like it gets you going, or you know, ramps you up. And I think really, if you haven't got practice at doing something, the only way to get over that is to practice. You just make sure that whatever presentation or speech that he's going to give or she's going to give, they need to be really well ready for it. Rehearse, bang it out. Because that's the bit. Once you know what you're doing, you can zone out and almost automatically get through it in front of whoever, you know, you're in the room with. I think that's the easiest.
And I think when you're practicing, if you're doing public speaking and you haven't any experience of doing it before, I think practicing in front of a mirror is very important. Because I think your facial expressions are equally, you know, if you remember to smile a lot and to, you know, kind of look up, it'll help you to feel more relaxed as well. And it'll give you that kind of feedback from the audience. And I think the other thing, I mean, I agree with what you said, that everybody feels nervous before you have to stand up and speak in front of people. The part where he or she says that they suffer from social anxiety, I mean, I know that that is a thing and it can be very debilitating. So I don't know whether they've just used that combination of words kind of or whether they've been diagnosed with a social anxiety, in which case they'd probably need some professional help if they find it like truly terrifying. And I know CBT can help with social anxiety, but if it's the kind of, in inverted commas, normal terror you feel before standing up in front of people, my experience would
be
the same.
Some people are just naturally the more introvert personality, and they don't rise to that particular challenge with the same enthusiasm that the more extrovert people are, you know, in getting up in front of people and, you know, or whatever it is that people do in public. But, you know, that's also something that for introverted people to remember is that's something they can use to their advantage by not being the person. I'm not thinking of anybody in particular, but that person that just talks and talks and talks.
2 weeks is 2 weeks time to maybe try and get out. And I know there are kind of after dinner places you can go to where you can stand up and talk.
Toastmasters and
things.
Possibly. The other thing to bear in mind is I remember the first time I had to stand up and I was very unprepared. So, I mean, I didn't take any of the advice that Declan has mentioned. And I had to stand up and I had to welcome people to an event. And this was years ago now. And introduce the person who was going to open. It was an art exhibition. I had met the person before. He wasn't a well-known person. He was a businessman. I'd met him before I went on stage. I knew his name. I'd been talking about him all week. got up on stage, sea of faces in front of me, welcomed everybody, and went to introduce your man, blank.
Yeah.
No idea what his name was. Like, not a clue. Ooh, and couldn't pretend. There. I mean, yeah. What can you do?
Oh, it's cringy.
It's awful. Yeah. But nobody died. And, you know, nobody even got hurt. And I had to admit that I had forgotten, and everybody was very pleasant. And it helps that at the time I was working for the Alzheimer's Society. But you know, so it's not a complete disaster if it all goes pear-shaped.
You are going to be nervous. That is never going to go away. It's just, if you know, if you stand up and speak, you're going to be nervous.
And he only told the people that who hired him is that he's comfortable with public speaking. Yeah. He hasn't told them that he's excellent. He's not Barack Obama. He doesn't need to be, you know, a world leader in rhetorical speech. But I suppose one thing is also to remember is that if you've ever been at a business presentation, 95% of them are mind-numbingly boring, delivered awfully by people who don't know how to do anything, page after page of awful PowerPoint slides and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, if you are mediocre, you'll be with the best of the business world.
You'll be in the top
10%.
Exactly,
yeah. Exactly.
That's the thing to remember. Preparation and practicing aloud are the key to good presentation. Also have confidence in the fact that you know the subject better than anybody who's listening to you. It's his own. And tell the caller to go on YouTube. There's loads of presentation stuff on YouTube
as well. That's a good idea. Yeah. That's a good idea.
Now, this final one for you. It's been 5 years since my last girlfriend broke up with me. The hardest and most heartbreaking experience I have ever had to deal with. Part of the reason she left me was because I lost my job and spent 3 months unemployed, putting a huge strain on the household, which she continued to support almost entirely on her income alone. 6 months ago, though, I began dating again when I met the girl of my dreams. It's been a whirlwind of fun and passion ever since. We go on several dates a week to restaurants, bars, the cinema, even on the odd weekend breakaway. Here's the thing, though. She has a great job and a steady income, whereas I work on a freelance basis. Some months are better than others for me, and all the dates can work out pretty expensive. Furthermore, I stress that I'll find myself in a similar situation to before, and I'm constantly worried about the fact that she earns more than me. It's not just as easy as cutting down the amount of dates or finding less expensive ways to enjoy ourselves. We've tried that, and she gets a bit bored. She enjoys the lifestyle we live. I don't particularly want to find a contract job at the moment, as this would tie me down, restrict my freedom to travel and pursue my artistic endeavours. What a mess. Suggestions, please.
I think this is kind of simple as far as I'm concerned. I mean, if he wants to continue this fabulous lifestyle of weekends away and nights out in restaurants and meals and the cinema and things that are costing him obviously a few bob, he needs to up his income and he needs to take the serious job if that's what he wants. But is that what he wants? And is that not being a little bit dishonest with her, because he's then playing a part in order that she doesn't get bored? And what does she want? Is she just looking for a social buddy to keep up with this kind of, in inverted commas, high-flying social life that she's pursuing? Or is she looking for a relationship? Because if she's looking for a relationship, being with him should be enough. And the fact that he said that, you know, doing things that are cheaper and that I have no expense involved, she gets bored. That would worry me now quite a bit, you know. And so I think that, I think also he's letting the demise of his previous relationship colour his handling of this one. And I mean, to me, you've got to be honest. You know, you've got to be honest with her. And I fully respect the fact that he wants to work the way he's working so that he can be creative or artistic or whatever, and he wants to travel. That's, to me, all fair enough. And if he's making enough money that can support the lifestyle that he was enjoying before he met her, then that's fine. He's perfectly entitled to do that. But I think he needs to be honest with her. And I think pretending he's somebody he's not in order to keep this fabulous relationship going is maybe not the best idea.
Yeah, it's like anything. It's that for a relationship to work, you need to compromise. If you don't give up what you really want in order to be yourself, you won't be happy. So he's got to work out that thing, that state of staying who he is or else changing himself a little bit to keep this partner. And I don't know if that's going to work at all. Mm. Dump her. She's frivolous.
Oh, wow. Ooh, boy, no prisoners taken there. That's the end. I love when we get a result at the end. That was definitely
Let
a result. There's no arguing with that.
Tom
one.
Wants to know.
Let us know next week, guys. Barbara, thank you very much. And Declan, thank you very much as well.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.